Welcome to the Warrior Wednesday podcast, featuring in-depth conversations with the men and women that serve the red, white, and blue. Warrior Wednesday is brought to you by Extreme Concepts, providing training, education, and security. Kill Cliff, refresh, recover, repeat. And by Frog Fuel, pure performance nutrition. And now, your host of Warrior Wednesday, Scott Chambers.
Welcome to the Warrior Wednesday podcast. I'm your host, Scott Chambers. Warrior Wednesday is brought to you by our friends at Extreme Concepts, Kill Cliff, and Frog Fuel. Coming up on today's program, a conversation with Virginia Congressman Scott Taylor. Scott Taylor is a former Navy SEAL sniper serving on SEAL Team 4. He's on the House Appropriations Committee. He is the only freshman member of Congress appointed to an A committee. Scott serves on the Homeland Security, Military Construction, Veterans Affairs, and Legislative Branch subcommittees. He's very passionate and an advocate for strong national defense, corporate and individual federal tax reform, free markets, and fair trade. He's also extremely passionate about VA healthcare, and we talk about those improvements in regulatory reform during today's podcast. Coming up this Friday, Congressman Taylor will be in Spanish Fort, Alabama at Felix's Fish Camp for a fundraising luncheon. If you would like more information about attending that luncheon, visit our website, warriorwednesday.com, to get details. We'll tell you more about it coming up in today's episode of Warrior Wednesday. Let's jump right into the conversation with Congressman Scott Taylor. Tell me, who is Scott Taylor?
Well, Scott Taylor was raised on the Eastern Shore in Maryland's Eastern Shore, Delmarva Peninsula. I was raised by a single mother and started working on a farm at age 11, but didn't start out with in terms of the right behavior. In fact, I remember being on the farm and a guy pulls up in a black car in a black suit, and he says, get in the car with me, son. Are you Scott Taylor? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, well, you're coming with me. And he shows me a badge. And the next thing I know, I'm, you know, headed down to the police station being charged with malicious destruction of property and breaking and entering. And as you can imagine how proud my mother was that her 11-year-old kid was about to be put on probation. So she signed me up for Big Brothers and Big Sisters, obviously that mentorship program. So that's my claim to fame, is I'm the first little brother elected to Congress. But because of that, the impactfulness that my big brother Andy had on my life, he instilled confidence and self-worth in me that enabled me to leave right out of high school, that small town, and I went to the Navy, and with the idea of being a Navy SEAL. And, you know, I initially wanted to be a Marine, but I read a Dick Marcinko book and watched that cheesy Charlie Sheen movie, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be a SEAL. That's what I want to do. So I went in at 18, made it through BUDS, our SEAL pipeline, and went to SEAL Team 4, where I spent about collectively two to three years in South Central America doing counter drug stuff and taught marksmanship reconnaissance as well to other SEALs, and then went on to Iraq and spent some time in Baghdad as well as Ramadi and as a sniper. And in Ramadi, I took a nasty fall on a sniper op about 20, 25 feet to concrete below and had a concussion, pneumothorax, bruised lung, torn PCL tendon, and 6 broken ribs down my spine. So that ended my little vacation in Iraq, and I was medevaced out to through Germany back home. And so I spent some time teaching marksmanship and reconnaissance again. So did some real estate when I got out of the Navy, but I also went back and forth to Yemen for about 3 or 4 years, where I ran a security apparatus for an oil company, about 150 Yemeni army folks and Bedouin tribal members. And right about on a daily basis, I was negotiating with armed tribesmen in the middle of the Arabian Desert, which is why it's easy for me to do it in Washington, because there's not AK-47s and Arabic everywhere. And during that time, I also used my GI Bill and finished a bachelor's degree from Harvard University in international relations. And I've done all my master's coursework in the same at Harvard, but I just got to do my thesis. So I got to find some time to do my thesis. And then I wanted to get involved in politics. I wanted to help and continue to serve. And so I got involved in politics, lost a race, and then I got elected to the Virginia House of Delegates, which is kind of like our state Congress. I served 2 terms there, and then my congressman decided to retire. So I jumped up, and here I am in U.S. Congress, and I serve on the Appropriations Committee and the subcommittees of Military Construction and Veterans Affairs, as well as Homeland Security. That's me in a nutshell.
That's a very impressive resume in a nutshell there. Let's go back for a moment to that day when that guy showed up with a badge and asked if you were Scott Taylor and you were going to face those charges. Did you think then as a kid you would ever have a career as a Navy SEAL and then a career working in Washington helping to reshape America? Did you ever think that was possible?
No. You know where I'm from, it's low income. And like I said, I was raised by a single mother with four kids in the house. And we didn't have any money or anything like that and didn't really care about grades. You know, honestly, it was my big brother that really changed the whole trajectory of my life. And I mean, he really, and I'll tell you a quick story, which I think is very impactful. You know, he came up to me when I graduated high school and he said, "Do you remember writing a letter?" And I said, "No, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, when you were 11, it's why I got matched up with you." And I didn't realize. He said three kids wrote a letter and they basically, well, they had matched him up with three kids. So each one of us wrote a letter. And he said, "The reason why I chose you was because in your letter, you know," and let me give a friendly preface by saying I played sports and all that stuff, and my mother was never there because she was always working, and my dad obviously wasn't there at all. And he said, "In your letter, you said, I just want someone to come to my games." Now, Andy was a coach, so he loved watching sports. And that guy came to every single wrestling match, every soccer match that he could, even when I traveled. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that that's why he was making that effort. Until I graduated high school. And honestly, it was because of Andy that he really instilled confidence and self-worth in me that would enable me to do whatever I wanted, whatever I set my mind to. I really attribute that to him and him changing the trajectory of my life.
Wow, that's an incredible story. So big brothers, big sisters, I'm sure is something that's near and dear to your heart to this day.
No question. No, look, I think anyone out there that's listening, if you're a mentor or you're seeking out a mentor, because look, we can all use mentors in whatever we're doing, and I continue to do that because I know the value of it. But if you're a mentor and you're helping folks, never underestimate the impact that you can have a little bit of your time, your wisdom, and your attention on someone's life.
Let's go back to your career in the Navy when you went off to become a Navy SEAL. You went to BUDS. You wanted to be a marksman? You wanted to be a sniper from the beginning there?
I didn't have any ambitions of being a sniper per se. I just wanted to, you know, be a SEAL. And I got to tell you, when you go there and you're 18 years old and, you know, everything's overwhelming, right? So as soon as I get there, I think the first workout that we did, like the first hour, the first part of the workout was 100 pull-ups. And I remember my calluses ripped and I was like, holy fish, what have I gotten myself into? But, you know, when you're 18, everything is just so overwhelming. So it was just one thing at a time, you know, one evolution at a time. Let me just get through this. Let me just get to lunch, you know. But I probably thought about quitting like every day, right? But not seriously, because, you know, I always thought about back home and everyone back home knew what I was doing. And I was like, there's no way that I'm going to let these guys or make these guys make me go ring a bell three times and quit. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to kill me.
You mentioned your injury earlier. Talk a little bit more about some of your deployments. Do you have a most memorable deployment?
Well, I mean, that was certainly the most memorable deployment. I went there. And it was interesting because the platoons were there, and they were, at the time, this is like 2005, the time the platoons were guarding the president and prime minister, et cetera, of Iraq. You know, so they were kind of doing like Secret Service work, if you will. You know, missions like that, of course. But I went there as like this augmentee of a sniper. So I wasn't attached to a specific platoon, which was awesome. Basically, I would go out and find work with the Army and the Marines to either do overwatches or, you know, to try to find folks. And then I'd go grab snipers from the platoons, which they loved because they were tired of, you know, babysitting the prime minister and stuff. And then they'd come with me and we'd do missions and stuff. And then I went out to Ramadi, which was pretty bad at the time. It was right before Chris Kyle, that kind of era. I'm sure your listeners have seen that, you know, the American Sniper and stuff. So Ramadi was kind of like a Mad Max in the Thunderdome type place. I mean, just a post-apocalyptic kind of place. But it was fascinating and it was interesting to do. And, you know, that obviously that mission that where I got injured was, I didn't remember everything because I was passed out, but obviously it stands in my mind. And basically it's nothing too sexy. It was just, you know, we were on this mission and we'd run it through the streets in the middle of the night and we were going to stay in a building for 3 to 5 days observing this intersection that was known to have enemies, you know, launching out of there and conducting attacks on coalition forces. So we go in and of course, when you go in, you still have your night vision goggles on, you know, light signature, because you don't want them to know that you're in there. You do it quietly. And as we were clearing the building to make sure there was no enemy inside, I had turned to hold security on the third deck stairwell and fell through the floor, I don't know, 20, 25 feet or so. And I didn't know exactly what had happened because I was out cold instantly. And I saw this petty officer who was the medic, basically. And he told me what happened a couple years later, actually. And, that I, you know, I fell down and hit something along the way down and then like face down. And when he got to me, he couldn't hear, or he could barely hear my breathing. It was very, very labored. So he inserted a J-tube and opened my airway and basically saved my life and stabilized my back. And then, gave me some morphine and called in the medevacs and loaded me onto the Marines came in with the Humvees. And he actually rode with the Marines to make sure that I got safely to the helicopter. And what's important about that, and very selfless, I think, is, you know, that road that he had to get to from the building to the helicopter, we had lost, like, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, 11 or 12 Marines that year alone. And what happened a lot of time is the first convoy goes through and that wakes up the bomb maker, you know, and then the next convoy gets hit. So they went through there, dropped me off at the helicopter. And then, he had to drive right back down that road to reach the team. And thank God nothing happened to them. I would have never been able to forgive myself if something happened to them on the way back, but he was able to do that. So then I remember the first time I woke up on the helicopter, I couldn't move very well because, of course, I was strapped in and I couldn't feel anything because of the morphine. And I just thought to myself, oh, my gosh, I'm paralyzed. You know, I'm paralyzed. And so I passed back out and I wake up again. I'm in the Balad Tent Hospital. So I grabbed my legs. I grabbed in between my legs and I said, thank you, God. Thank you, God. I'm good. So I would have to say that's my most memorable deployment, of course.
I can imagine so. And a lot of guys that I talk to that have been injured, they say that once they come to and they check, the first thing they do is they check and see if their limbs are there, like you just described. And then they say that they worry that their time downrange or in the field may be over. Did that cross your mind?
I didn't even think about that, to be honest with you. I don't think I was thinking about that. I was, I was breathing down a pneumothorax in the hospital and flirting with the nurse and stuff like that. So I don't think I was thinking about that.
So after that, did you see any more deployments after your injury, or is that when you came back?
So I had already previously been doing teaching marksmanship and reconnaissance, and I just went back to that. And then my time was out of the Navy. So when I enlisted initially into the Navy in 97, I was planning on doing enlistment and then coming back home and going to college. And then I got home from a deployment overseas in August of 2001. So we all know what happened in September. So I actually reenlisted early to go to war, and I did another enlistment, if you will. So my time was up then, and I, you know, wanted to do different things as well too in my life. And I just finished out my time and got out. But then, of course, I found myself, back, like I said, back in Yemen for about 10 trips, if you will, because it was as a civilian, so not necessarily deployment. But I went there 10 times during the Arab Spring and everything, which was very interesting as well. So it's kind of hard, you know. I think a lot of folks that were in my position or in some similar background, you even if you get out of it, you like leave a toe in, you know, because you're kind of drawn to that kind of stuff.
Our guest on Warrior Wednesday is Congressman Scott Taylor from Virginia's 2nd District. Let's talk now about your time post-military and what you've done since getting out of the Navy. You were a successful small business owner. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I've been buying property since I was like 19 years old. So rental properties, still have a bunch of those. Did some development as well. Got my ass kicked like most people in the recession. So what's interesting about my generation is, you know, we've known two major things in our lives: war and recession. So it definitely affects you. But and then I just also was doing security consulting, like I said, and going back and forth for an oil company in Yemen.
So you did that. You were working with a successful real estate company doing real estate. Then you decide to get involved in politics. What made you decide you wanted to continue serving America, but this side with a suit and tie on and working on the political aspect? What made you decide politics is for me?
So I started to pay more attention, I think, and what was going on politically, even at the local level. And I never really had any aspirations of politics. However, I did in some journals. I'd write about it a little bit, even though I had no idea what the hell it was. And I happened to be in D.C. at this international real estate conference. And Andy Card was the keynote speaker. Now, Andy Card was the chief of staff for President Bush.
the famous photograph when, on 9/11 when Bush is reading to the kids and the guy walks over and whispers in his ear, that's Andrew Card. So he's speaking at this conference and he's talking about getting involved and we need great people and, you know, to continue to serve at the local, the state, and the federal level. And it just, I was already thinking about it and that was really the catalyst. And I was like, you know what, screw it, I'm going to do it. And I actually, afterwards, I got up and I told him that. And I stayed in contact with him too. And so I just put my hat in the ring and sort of a political neophyte. And like I said, I lost, but which was fine. I learned a lot. And then there was a spot that opened up. There's a gentleman that was retiring from the House of Delegates, again, state Congress. And I put my hat in the ring and we won a primary and then won the general and sir, like I said, served two terms there. And it was fascinating. I was able to help people. You know, you have a seat at the table really, and you're able to solve problems and maybe use power to assist people who might not have it. I passed 10 laws in the state house that had to do with energy and education and obviously veterans as well, which is something that's I'm passionate about. And then when my current congressman decided to retire, we jumped up, won a brutal primary. We were outspent 12-1 against a 8-term incumbent, and we beat him and then we won the general. And you know, the things that I really focus on is I want a strong military. I'm doing everything we can to help our veterans, of course, and then a contracting job. So working on in those three spaces. But you know, we continue to work a lot. I mean, my office is busy all the time because, you know, I know this is a temporary. I'm holding a temporary position as my constituents want me there to work for them, and we're not going to waste any time. I have zero desire to sit in Congress and say I'm a congressman for 30 minutes. I want to use every second to effect change and get things done and help people.
Congressman Taylor, I think that's a beautiful thing, the way you look at that, because if more guys, and I have friends there in Washington, and I even wish some of my friends viewed it that way, that you are there serving the people. They voted for you, they elected you to get something done, and you realize this is a temporary seat. You know, they can hold you accountable the next time elections come up.
Absolutely.
And you do realize that. And I love the fact that you focus on veterans issues. I think that's one thing, especially our listeners of the Warrior Wednesday podcast appreciate you focusing on those issues. What is it that you want to focus on the most looking out for at the men and women that have served America?
Well, I think one of the things this Congress has already done, obviously the folks down there in Alabama and Congress as well, is, you know, we passed this Veterans Accountability Act that the president's now signed into law, and that allows for people to be fired who were not performing. I mean, you had this guy that was the head of the Puerto Rico Veterans Affairs thing. He was stealing prescription drugs and using it. He got a DUI and they tried to fire him and he appealed it and he was back at the job, which is just incredible. So we passed that. That was a huge thing. We've also got to get, I mean, there's about 600 or 700 underutilized or not used offices around the country from the VA. They got to get rid of those things so that we can focus on helping veterans. We've got to get better customer service at the VA itself. There has to be some more private care. So if you have duplication of healthcare, if right down the street and you can go to a private hospital, you should be able to do that if you so choose. We're working on that as well too, to make sure that veterans are cared for. PTSD, TBI, depression amongst veterans. We have to treat those things in a way that prevents suicide, so we don't have, you know, obviously the loss of life and loss of families that's out there. And make no mistake about it, the past 16 years, you've had 1% of the nation that has gone back over and over again and bore that brunt on their shoulders and their families, quite frankly, because the families get forgotten a lot of times. But, you know, that's a crucial element to make sure that we have a strong military, is we have strong families. So anything in those spaces that we can do to help out, that's what we work on.
Absolutely. And I know the VA system has improved, but a quick personal story I can add to that. My dad is disabled military, Army, and he recently suffered a stroke, and it took over 2 months to get an appointment with the VA to be seen following his stroke. He was supposed to follow up 1 week after the stroke, but it took 2 months before we were able to get into a VA clinic in Pensacola, Florida just last week. So it has improved, but there still needs to be a lot more work done.
Yeah, and that's incredible. I mean, that's the kind of thing, where if they can't do it in 2 months, well, he should be able to go down the street and get the care that he needs wherever it is. I think that's an obligation that we have to him and the rest of the vets are out there.
Absolutely. Also, one thing I noticed, Congressman, you focus on health care quite a bit. I see that back in May, you voted yes on H.R. 1628. And also in February, you co-sponsored H.R. 1227, which would end the Marijuana Prohibition Act. How would you feel about veterans that need maybe medical cannabis, since I guess you want to end it nationwide? Do you think that's something that could help our vets?
I do, and I would support it. You know, I think when you look currently right now, and I think this is important to say, marijuana at the federal level is treated like heroin. They're obviously not the same thing, not even close. And I think you get rid of decriminalization at the federal level. You let the states decide, let them do what they want to do with it. But I do support, and I know veterans as well that have used it that feel like it's helped with anxiety and other issues as well. And they're not, you know, I have no desire to use it. I never have, never really cared about it, never want to. But I do support that. I do support it for veterans if they think that it can help them out. I support decriminalizing it at the federal level and let the states decide. That's something that I think should happen. I think I just think it's irresponsible to keep that as the same thing as heroin. And quite frankly, at the federal level, I just that's my opinion, especially when states are moving forward with their own policies and stuff like that. I think that it's time for the feds to act to let the states take care of it under the 10th Amendment.
Well said. Our guest on Warrior Wednesday is Congressman Scott Taylor, and we've only got a couple of minutes left. Congressman, you're going to be at an event in Mobile, Alabama this Friday, and I encourage everyone that's listening to Warrior Wednesday to head out to this fundraising luncheon to support Scott Taylor from Virginia's 2nd District of Congress. And that takes place this Friday, October 27th, 11:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. at Felix's Fish Camp over in Spanish Fort, Alabama. So hope everyone makes it out to that event. For more information on that, you can go to warriorwednesday.com.
Looking forward to getting back down to Alabama. I like Alabama, and I'm definitely going to be supporting Jeff Steele, who's running for state senate down there, who is also a SEAL.
Yeah, Jeff has been on the Warrior Wednesday podcast with us before. He's a great guy. Congressman Taylor, a final question I have for you. What is it you miss most about being a Navy SEAL?
The boys, man. It's the boys. Look, anytime, well, let me say this. I will never again serve with the concentration of high caliber people ever again. So you always miss the boys. It's always amazing to have a team or be in part of a team that you know desires to serve a cause greater than themselves and would rather die than not carry their weight. That's a beautiful thing, and it's hard to replicate.
And you think that the Navy has also helped you in your career in private business and also now as a congressman?
There's no question. I mean, in my formative years as a young man, it was in the SEAL team. So, you know, it's something that will be with me forever, and it helped forge and form who I am today.
Congressman Scott Taylor, I appreciate you being on Warrior Wednesday.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Warrior Wednesday podcast, brought to you by Extreme Concepts, Frog Fuel, and Kill Cliff. Make sure you visit us online at warriorwednesday.com. Go to iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a rating. Tell all of your friends about Warrior Wednesday. Join us again next Wednesday for more in-depth conversations right here on Warrior Wednesday.
You've been listening to the Warrior Wednesday podcast. Join us again next Wednesday for a new episode of Warrior Wednesday. Warrior Wednesday is brought to you by Extreme Concepts, providing training, education, and security. Kill Cliff, refresh, recover, repeat. And by Frog Fuel, pure performance nutrition. Warrior Wednesday is a product of Yellowhammer Media.